What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war.
Libertarianism.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Hi, everybody. Today I'm in the studio in lingerie, and I'm going live on Facebook Live for just a few minutes. Welcome, welcome, welcome to What Would Save the World. And my guest canceled on me today, so you know what that means? We're going to talk about what it's been like to do What Would Save the World for almost a year now. We're going to talk about what it's been like to talk to different people about all the big issues going on in the world, about all the hard topics. We're going to talk about all those things, but in lingerie. And you know what? You know what would save the world? Nothing. Nothing's going to save the world because we're totally, totally fucked. And that's what I've learned in a year of doing What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. I have learned that people literally just don't give a fuck. I've learned that people are terrible. I've learned that, like, we're so divided everywhere. Everybody still wants to talk to me about Bernie Sanders. I've learned that electoral politics are just, like, total crap. I've learned that I'm a piece of shit. See, when I talk about how you're all pieces of shit, I'm a piece of shit, too. I've been called a sensationalist. I've been called a fucking self-loathing white person. And now everybody's leaving my live video because this is really whack, because nothing would save the world. Nothing would save the world. All right. You guys want to talk about what you think would save the world? Just give me a call over Facebook Messenger. And I'm in lingerie. Who is this? Hello? Hello? An 800 number called my phone. An 800 number called my phone. Am I still alive? Is this still a thing? I don't even know. But I'm in lingerie. I'm in lingerie. I'm in lingerie in the fucking studio. And nobody's even watching this. Goodbye. Yeah, so I just did a Facebook Live lingerie video where I talked about how nothing would save the world. And some people watched it, some people didn't. But yeah, I just feel like people don't really care about the world anymore. I'm just getting really tired of the fucking alt-right, the alt-whites. Getting really tired of the left. I'm getting really tired of fucking Assad worshippers. There's all these fucking people who just, like, want to talk about how we should deal with the fucking... how we should deal with the fucking dictator Assad. And it gets really complicated, I understand. People want to be like, write fucking love letters to Kim Jong-il. It's fucking crazy. It's fucking crazy. And, yeah, I'm gonna play some fucking Meatloaf in the background. Right now you're listening to Slime and the Ice Machine by William Malsom. William Malsom is an Austin-based musician, and yeah, he's pretty cool. So let's play some fucking Meatloaf. I'm gonna play I Do Anything for Love in the background. Oh, but it's playing at the same time as the other thing. Damn.
I won't do that. days it don't come easy, and some days it don't come hard. Some days it don't come at all, and these are the days that never end. And some nights you're breathing fire, and some nights you're caught in ice. Some nights you're like nothing I've ever seen before. Will again. And maybe I'm crazy. Oh, it's crazy and it's true. I know you can save me. No one else can save me now but you. As long as the planets are turning, as long as the stars are burning, as long as your dreams are coming true, you better believe it, that I would do anything for love. Oh, I would do anything for love.
I'd punch a Nazi. I won't force you to be monogamous.
I won't do anything for love, anything you've been dreaming of. But I just won't do that. I won't do anything for love, anything you've been dreaming of. But I just won't do. And some days I pray for silence, and some days I pray for soul. Some days I just pray to the god of sex and drums and rock and roll. And maybe
but use protection, baby.
That's all I'm qualified to be. That's just one and only promise I can keep. As long as the wheels are turning, as long as the fires are burning.
I just remember that progress is not real.
Within the collective. The world is not going to be the same. Are you kidding me?
I'm a band of the
angels
wrapped up in my heart.
We're so fucked. We're so screwed. That's why I'm in here right now with my motherfucking life. Because, like, there's nothing that can possibly. I'm crying. What was there in the world? What a fucking arrogant title for me. Especially the show wrecked by me. Like, I didn't wait too much acid in my teens. I did so much acid when I was 19 that, like, pretty much any time I get a headache or my stomach hurts, I'm just like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. I think I'm having an acid flashback or I'm going totally insane. This is what it happens. This is what it hits me. This is when you go full-blown psychotic. I should just go fucking live on a commune somewhere, and I did live on a commune, and I did live on a fucking commune, and it was great, but it wasn't perfect, and it was just like, it was, there was just like, there's all these fucking problems, there's problems everywhere. Can we save the world? I don't know. Is this art? Fuck you, Tom Mike Chekalock. You're one of those fucking lefties who's like all obsessed with Assad and shit. Like, oh god, like, damn, like, you have a point sometimes, but damn, man, like, is that art? Is that called? I don't know what that is. Whatever. I'm not going to get into that. Anyway. Anyway. Yes, I'm going totally insane right now, Darren Williams. Darren Williams. Oh, Darren Williams, who makes me realize that I'm an idiot all the time. Oh, what would save the world if Darren Williams called me an idiot a little more? He's never actually called me an idiot. He just makes me feel like that. Because I'm not qualified to have this show. And this is what happens when you try to do a show that's going to try to save the world for you. You just start to go a little crazy. You just go... All right, we're going to put on Meatloaf's Anti-Corporate Life. Yeah. Yeah, come back to take it. I'll get it off right here.
It's divisive!
It's corroded and decayed!
divisive.
It's tattered and it's frayed.
What about your cars? They're defective.
They forgot the warranty.
What about your town?
It's defective.
It's a dead end street to me.
What about your school? It's defective.
It's a packed up useless land.
What about your work? It's defective.
It's a crock and then you die.
What about your childhood? It's defective.
Dissed a bunch of fucking culty leftists. I dissed fucking everybody. I'm fucking insane. No one should ever talk to me again. Who watches? I got a lot of views. Anyway, so let's take a little bit of a turn here. And I think, we'll let the song play out. But I think we're going to have some good conversations on what would save the world today. We were supposed to have a really fucking serious episode. We were going to talk about how Marxism and anarchism are Eurocentric ideas. And, you know, that's, like, super nerdy and stuff. And I feel like I just got a lot of attention right now from all these people. Hopefully some people want to call in and talk about stuff. But we could also talk to my friend. We could talk about whiteness in anarchist circles. Let's try that. Let me find out what... Yeah. Nothing's gonna save the world. Unless you actually do something. Who's gonna save the world? You. You gotta just, like, actually do your something. Do something with yourself. Yeah, it's getting pretty painful. Oh, I know what I could do. I asked all my Tinder matches what they think is gonna... what everybody thinks will save the world. Let's check it out. Somebody said, access to real education. That's a good answer. He's a keeper. Oh, I'm gonna text him, you're a keeper. And then somebody else said... I said, what would save the world? And they said,
at Optimum,
if we, fucking ads. They said,
The video I made was not posted to Facebook because it says that I would do anything for love. It was. I can post this video if I feel like it was a mistake, so I'm posting it anyway. Whatever. They can fuck with me. Yeah, whatever. Meatloaf. If Meatloaf wants to fuck with me, motherfucker voted for Trump. So whatever. Wait, what the fuck? Oh, no, that was a video. Yeah, somebody just sent me a picture of an onion and a girl crying. So apparently I've done something that's people are a little overwhelmed by my bullshit. So somebody said, if we take care of it, not throwing plastic everywhere, that would be a good thing. What are you up to today? What's up with me today is I'm freaking out and being the sensationalist anarchist Ann Coulter who just really fucking pissed off that people don't want to work collectively. People don't want to work collectively. People don't know how to work collectively. And if they want to, they don't really want to. They just want to go on Tinder. And that's what I'm doing. And what would it save the world? Somebody said, there's probably a few different approaches to go about it. I suppose it would depend on your ideology. And I said, what do you think? Apparently they don't think. Alrighty. So let's make a call. Let's make a call to someone right now. Let's call my activist friend. We're going to talk about anarchism in white spaces or white people in anarchist spaces and their fucking god awful behavior. Let's see if they fucking pick up their phone. Is it going to work? Is it working? It should be ringing, but it's not. Hello? God. Somebody said they're at work and they want to know if I was talking shit about them. Let's call them and see if they fucking answer. This person's called Dima Bear. We fight on the internet all the time because I'm a fucking loser. Let's call them. Let's see if they answer the phone. Hello? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me? What the fuck is going on? Oh, what the fuck? God damn it. Here, we're gonna have to put another fucking song on here. Let's put on a Sweeney Todd song. Here we go. Wait, can you hear me? Michael, hold on one second. What the fuck? Everything's going crazy. My fucking computer wants to fucking play ads and shit. You know what? That's one of the most things that pisses me off the most about fucking everything in the entire world. Is I can't avoid ads. I have like two choices. I can either fucking like be like out in the woods away from everybody and everything, or I have to be in ads. Like here, I come on the computer, I'm trying to read an article. The fucking trying to sell HBO and Showtime to me. It's so much fucking bullshit. It makes me so fucking mad.
Out!
There we go.
This fumbling, shouting, what is it now, dear?
I had him and then.
Oh no, the sailor busted and I saw them both running down the street and I said,
I had him! His sword was there beneath my hand.
Now, dear, don't fret.
No, I had him! His sword was there and he'll never come again.
Easy now, hush now, hush. I keep telling you,
when?
What's your rush?
Why did I wait? You told me to wait, now he'll never come again. There's a hole in the world like a great black pit, and it's filled with people who are filled with shit, and the vermin of the world inhabit it. But not for long. They all deserve to die. Tell you why, Mrs. Love, tell you why. Because in all of the whole human race, Mrs. Lovett, there are two kinds of men and only two. There's the one staying put in his proper place, and the one with his foot in the other one's face. Look at me, Mrs. Lovett, look at you. Though we all deserve to die. Tell you why, Mrs. Lovett, tell you why. Because the lives of the wicked should be made brief for the rest of us. Death will be a relief. We all deserve to die. And I'll never see Joanna. No, I'll never hug my girl to be finished. All right, you sir, how about a shave? Come and visit your good friend, Sweeney. You sir, too sir, welcome to the grave I will have vent.
vengeance, I will have salvation.
Who, sir?
You, sir? No one's in the chair. Come on, come on! Sweeney's waiting. I want you, waiters. You, sir? Anybody? Gentlemen, now don't be shy. Not one man, no, nor 10 men, nor 100 can assuage me. I will have you. And I will get him back, even as he gloats. In the meantime, I'll practice on less honorable throats. And my Lucy lies in ashes, and I'll never see my girl again. But the work waits. I'm alive at last, and I'm
Oy vey, everything's a fucking mess right now. Everything's a fucking mess. I'm trying to get in contact with somebody so we can talk shit about shit. And I'm trying to call them on Skype. I'm trying to call my fucking activist friend Anthony, and they're not answering, and it's really annoying. And Let's try something right now. Let's just try something. We're going to try the regular phone. Anyway, how do you guys feel about the Paris Agreement? You know how I feel about the Paris Agreement? I feel like it's one of those things where, like, libertarians want to act like we are, like, smaller government is good. And, like, I get that. There's parts of it that I agree with because I think that, like, you know, it's cool to have, like, small decision-making groups and such, but then they want to go by what they call, like, this NAP principle, which stands for non-aggression principle, and the environment is one of those things that's aggressive. Oh, can you hear me? Oh, I thought, okay, sorry, I'm trying to make this call. It's one of those things that's, like, super aggressive. Hello? You can hear me? Oh, my God. We have Anthony, can you still hear me? Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? It's not, I don't think it's working right now. I don't know what the fuck to think of any of this. Yeah, we're gonna have to give up on that. Why is it not working? This is making me very angry. Anyway. The Paris Agreement is, like, so I understand small governments, and it's really cool that, like, I guess, like, cities are stepping up to the plate to be in part of the Paris Agreement. But I just feel like part of, like, not being aggressive is not fucking destroying your fucking neighbor's environment for the purpose of capitalism. That's what drives me so nuts about capitalism. It's like, what's the fucking point? Like, you just want to make all this fucking money just to make money? Like, what about the world, man? Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, what does that do? It improves things for a short period of time, but it doesn't improve things for the long term. Do you know? So it's actually, like, incredibly inefficient. Like, we get these words that are like, oh, efficient. But it's not efficient. It's not efficient because it's not long lasting. Like, I think that we need to change the definition of the word efficient to be the word sustainable. And I'm not sure if people are exactly ready to do that, because you'd have to give up a lot of things. You'd have to be able to deal with maybe not having avocados all the time, or not having everything that you want right on demand. Like, you can still have a healthy diet and not have everything you fucking need. Like, it drives me fucking off the wall. Like, I'm just very confused by all of this. And oh, great, now it's working. We're gonna get Anthony on the phone.
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I can hear you now. Thank fucking... Yeah, I had to restart my phone. I don't know, it was being really weird. So, what are we going to talk about today, Anthony?
What happened?
We're going to talk about fucking white anarchists, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's overviewing about, like, the dangers of, not the dangers, but just, like, the implication and the difference between, like, white anarchist spaces and, like, folks of color.
Wait, can you either talk louder or is it hard to hear you?
But, like, we can talk about, you can hear me?
Hello? I can hear you, yeah.
Like, the different dynamics of, like, anarchist spaces are predominantly run by white folks and and how that looks like and how that makes it, like, not necessarily inclusive for anybody that are affected by the systemic oppression. In that sense, it's kind of more like an analysis of, like, what is the problem with white anarchism.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that.
So what do you think the problems are?
Well, I mean, the biggest problem is that, like, people like to pretend that, you know, it often is very colorblind.
Oh, yeah, I'm colorblind.
It's very colorblind, and it is often very not inclined to be receptive with intersectionality,
mm-hmm.
especially when the space is run predominantly by white men, because white men don't internally want to be challenged with social issues that's pertaining caste, class, war analysis. Right?
Like, yeah, they want to be stuck in this class thing, but what they don't understand is, like, that, like, every time we go to, like, this, like, it's, to me, it almost kind of, like, rings, like, All Lives Matter when people talk about, like, oh, we have to all unite
well, then the difference between a white man who is a liberal and a white man as an anarchist is only in the only difference with them is pretty much just political platform. That does not guarantee whatsoever that their social interaction of the current world removes them from having any sort of access and privilege. Mm-hmm. So their way of thinking, if it's not challenged, is detrimental to the type of space that's being created.
But then it just becomes your typical white male dominated space.
White men is all a problem. We're talking about having an analysis of, like, whiteness in the context of, like, dominant power that has been asserted to many cultures, many groups, many genders, and many races in power. So if it's not in check, then it's automatically going to demand, you know, those who happen to be of white privilege automatically inclined, conscious or non-conscious, to demand assertiveness in the state. So it's like, what if that's liberal? What if it's anarchism? It's problematic or outright. But the problem is that anarchism, right, demands unnecessary hierarchy to create a space. That is included and not limited to challenging any sort of social power that allows certain people to decide what is good for other people. So when you have, like, five people that gets to decide as an autonomous group, right? Five white men deciding the well-being of a marginalized issue of a community. That does come across as a vanguard party deciding for the marginalized.
Which is the same as our fucking system.
Huh?
Which is, like, the same as our system, like a bunch of people deciding what happens with everybody, like a little group.
What? I can't hear what you were saying.
What I'm saying is, like, what it turns into is, like, the same shit as our system, like a bunch of people, like a smaller group deciding what happens to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing that what we found upon in other groups. Like, we can't say we're anti-white supremacists, but yet the power structure of any infinity group is only limited within expression of whiteness. That is also the same thing in the context of, like, if we're talking about being mindful of the fans and the women of the space and the decision-making bodies predominantly just men. And their culture is only within the context of masculinity. It's very dangerous to allow people to... There has to be some sort of healthy fine line to find a way to figure out how to find the balance in the space. So, like, it's very important for us to understand that there is something to be told about not checking somebody's privilege, or to truly, it's not checking yourself when you're in the space, knowing that there are other people that benefit more in that space outside, you know, because in the capitalist system, most of us, our levels of oppression vary depending on how the state sees us based on our gender, race, and class as a whole.
Yeah, and I mean, it drives me crazy because it's like, I feel like it's like, yes, like, I would love it if we lived in a world where we didn't, you know, weren't defined by those things, but that's just not the reality. Like, I think a lot of people who are anarchists, like, want to live in, like, a fantasy world about
well,
that.
Well, anarchism is not necessarily, like we've said this, anarchism is not limited, you know, anarchism is currently defined in this country under the notion of whiteness, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, when people talk about anarchism, the first thing that they gravitate to is Emma Goldman. But those are not the only, you know, those are not the only visionaries of anarchism, or like what contributed to the literature of anarchism. There's non-Western literature that often caters towards a lot of folks of color. And also there's not a lot of credit that's being given to those people who was able to write it down, right? And say, these were works of indigenous people. These are works of poor people who lived in the village, and the only way they can operate was to work collectively in an unnecessary removing unnecessary hierarchy, right? So, like, there needs to be some sort of decolonization. And a lot of times the material of anarchism in America often, right, comes from a very post-colonial experience. So it's like, how would you say that you're anti-colonial or anti-antifa, or you're an anarchist when your material gears towards more post-colonial experience? So that would have to, and denouncing any sort of pre-colonial experience, which, by the way, you know, a lot of like indigenous community or outside and inside this country have practiced for a really long time. You know, it's, and I think that if we really want to examine what an anarchist society looks like, we wouldn't have to gravitate outside the experience of white colonial experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, the call failed. We're going to call back. We're going to call back. We're going to call back. Oh, no, we're getting such a beautiful gem there. Oh, I hope we get Anthony back. Oh no, what if they don't answer? Oh no. What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do? You're listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. What would save the world so my phone would work?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Yes, it dropped. Answer your phone. They're texting me like, oh, did it drop? I'm like, yes, it dropped. Answer the phone. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you can hear me again. Okay, keep going.
It dropped.
Yeah, it dropped.
So it's like it's having an analysis about like the space, and it's also like, you know, a lot of the material that is available for people in this country when it comes to anarchism, it tends to get towards white experience, and then that's not necessarily true. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are a lot of materials out there that cast, you know, elevating white perspectives. So if we're really going for like unnecessary hierarchy, there needs to be some sort of transparency as to like what material we are trying to elevate, collectively speaking. And that depends on really on affinity groups, how they are offering. But there needs to be a lot of reflection of, like, is there something wrong when the space is predominantly with a white boy, when we're talking about feminine, you know, we're talking about women's liberation? Is there really a problem having conversations about queer liberation when majority of the space is cis? And when I said having conversations to execute a solution without them being in the space. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and that's often the experience I got with predominantly white anarchist cases. They are often, I'm not saying most, I'm not saying a lot, I'm not saying that, there's a handful of them, but most of them often do operate with just some kind of tokenized race. It's just recently that a lot of the anarchist groups are now operating in a way that's more inclusive. But there's a lot of resistance for those who somehow can afford to get in and out. Like, there's a dramatic difference between a black anarchist woman or a black trans woman of color who's an anarchist, who's building away from the system that currently persecutes them because of who they are, and a white man who can choose to be politically inclined.
Mm-hmm. That's something that you, if you get to choose to be political, you need to consider a lot.
I mean, they can choose themselves to be in and out of any political spaces, even anarchism, right? But so, like, it's almost like to me, it comes across more like a part-time job. Like, they go into the space, they do their thing, they walk away, they go back to the real world of the capitalist society. Some people can afford to go in there. So that kind of dynamics are completely different. Do I think that kind of conversation needs to take place from one group to another? Yes, it has to. Because the process of, personally for me, in order for us to move forward, there needs to be an initiative to decolonize the language that currently exists in the system. You cannot say that you're an anarchist, right, which I often see in the white anarchist spaces, and you're using the same rhetoric that the system is using against people. So you do have to question,
like, what kind of rhetoric?
Yeah, like, you have to question, like, the gender lines, right? How is, the definition of gender in the system is defined based on the interest of the capitalist system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that the fact that the way we currently define gender based on, like, male and female, and male inherently is masculinity inherently belongs to male, and femininity inherently belongs to women, right? That this is like the very basis of the foundation of any sort of sanctity of marriage in this country. But in other indigenous groups or other, like, non-Western groups, there are different definitions of gender. Sometimes it's defined by spirit, there's the third gender, right? Like, the fact of anarchist spaces, like, one of my good friends had said to me one time, she goes, like, I don't, as an indigenous woman, told me, and it really stuck to me in a chord about really questioning about the definition and the words that we use, is that when she was asked, do you think it's worth fighting for feminism? And she said, no, because feminism, in our culture, women were respected equally as men. It is until after colonial experience where my indigenous community, who are women, have been indoctrinated to this ideology that women are less than. So fighting feminism is tolerating the very existence of the system. We're not really breaking it. And this is the same thing I feel with, queerness, right? Like, I feel like, for me, I'm not interested in fighting my liberation through assimilation to the state. I am interested of being liberated outside that parameter, having to have some sort of freedom to define who I am,
which is like the value of, like, anarcho-feminism, but also, like, the interesting thing is, like, I remember that activist that you're talking about. They said that they're not feminist, but they support feminism. It was interesting. It was a very interesting conversation.
Well, there is something to be a lot just to say that. To some things that there are materials that we're not considered, right? Like, we're not sitting there and saying we're anti-state, but yet the material we use is perfect. So when we're simply saying, there needs to be a lot of decolonization when it comes to material, right? So we can't just reserve and say, this is something that I'm not saying that a lot of white anarchist spaces don't actively, but if you are not, if you don't have, if you're materials that you're using tend to cater towards more like post-colonial experience, it is natural for you to just go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But there is need to be an active participation and say, is the gender that we currently have benefits the state? Does it control the state? Is it defined by the state? Is, you know, the fact that we're talking about gender and race, I mean, even like, let's talk about, like, when in the context of Black capitalism, right? Like, is Blackness, are we liberating folks of color around, especially Black community, in the context of, like, liberating them by adjusting them to the system that's built in white supremacy? So it's like, these are the things that people really need to sit there and have a conversation of themselves. Is this the reality that you're willing to face? Because there is a significant difference, and also going back to the basis of, you know, anarchism, it's like a lot of people tend to look to Emma Goldman, right? Emma Goldman, anarchist.
I do dig her. But...
They often see her as an anarchist spirit. She's not a theory. Her experience is not based in theory. It's based in philosophy. She saw a world that was problematic, and through her actions, she created solutions. The problem with a lot of anarchists, who I'm seeing predominantly white spaces, right, they see it as almost like a brand, an emblem, a patch. It's almost kind of like, oh, we're an anarchist, we're just rabble rousers. But like, they're almost, like, I hate to say it, there's something very barbaric about wanting to rip the rug under a structure, thinking that it's somehow it's going to resolve everything. But guess what? Taking that rug out of the, you know, abolishing the system with no alternative structure does not diffuse the violence for the system, the society that's going to get targeted. That's not going to stop them biggest coming after Black and brown and indigenous, queer, trans, consent. Because it's inherently part of society. You take the system down, you take the government down, you still have a society that is already being conditioned to think that Black people are bad, that queer people are bad, trans women are bad. So, like, those structures are not existing, and you're not providing an alternative structure to feed society, to provide community support. Then what you're doing is that you're just subjecting people into violence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that people are not, there's a difference between, that's my experience with predominantly white anarchist spaces. There's this fantasy of ripping the band-aid, but not physically putting in the work that accommodates to the reality. Like, you know, it's supposed to be a solution-oriented space. A lot of anarchist spaces are APOC. Most of them operate in a solution-oriented because it's not a choice. When you're in a situation where you're not getting fed, your community's not eating, all of these things are almost part of the daily life, and it's not like something like, what do they call those? You get to choose to be an activist or whatever that is. So you're gonna, today I'm gonna help people. These structures are not something that they do just because they do just because they need, you know, we want to do it because we have a spare time. They do it because it's very tiring to watch the Black man across the street have nowhere to go when the system says to them that they're poor and they're bad. We're not going to reward you for being poor, right? So it's like at some point there is some sort of evolution that needs to take place when it comes to anarchism. And
definitely.
I'm not very surprised that, you know, we heard about a lot of outright, a lot of them are anarcho-capitalists. You know, anarcho-capitalism is real. You know, it's real to some people because it's a reflection of people, you know, particularly a demographics of people who said, I don't really want to talk about intersectionality. I don't really want to talk about, you know, this, you know, some wider range of oppression, as long, especially if it's challenging my whiteness, you know, my masculinity. and my sisters. So hence, all right, you know, hence anarcho-capitalists believe that they, you know, they want to use their own autonomy to create an economy that is more, you know, inclined to save their assets. But we have to remember that these are the birth childs of those cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we're not keeping in check. And I think that it's like, if we really want to move forward, there needs to be a lot of reflection about, and I always said to you too, I always look at anarchism as like water, right?
Mm-hmm.
Water and, you know, the glasses or like different sets of glasses with different shapes is reality. When you pour a water into a glass in a shape of a circle or a shape of a jar or whatever, they maintain, you know, their shape changes, right? But they maintain their composition as water. And the problem with anarchism at the moment is that it's so rigid and, you know, and they're operating in such a rigid way. And it's almost like we're mimicking the same structure we fight against.
Yeah, I think so. I think because people are conditioned by those structures.
Huh?
Because people are conditioned by the society we currently live in and they carry it over. And I see people doing it a lot in the way they communicate with each other. I see people communicate with each other very coercively, like, oh, you need to be this way, you need to be this way. And it's like, what the fuck? I thought this was anarchism.
Yeah. Well, there's different variations to me when people who are anarchists who live in the mountains or the province who are constantly in battle with the capitalist society or, not, you know, imperialist motherfuckers, and people who live in the city. I understand. I mean, my God, I live in a fucking city. But I do have also the opportunity, before coming to this country, to live in a country where, you know, it was run in a more collective fashion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know in my experience that consensus process should not be formalized. The fact that consensus process have become more a formalized space to extract collectivism. It's not how collectivism works. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Collectivism is something that you get when you take an initiative
mm-hmm.
to build a unity within your community. Collectivism is about living among each other and addressing each other's needs collectively.
Yeah, a lot of people don't get that.
And a lot of people don't get that. And, you know, consensus is not a government structure or a political structure or a formalized structure. It's an informal process to come to an agreement to something. But that requires respect. Like, you cannot have a body of 100 people who have never had any sort of connection among each other, which, by the way, is part of our country, because we're so individualized, to come to consensus on something that they've never built any sort of relationship to.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's easier for other countries who have collectivism in their unity. Like, if you go to, like, let's just say, Korea, or you go to Hong Kong, or you go to Malaysia, or you go to other places that operate in living. Like, they have a house, but the house that they have is so big that every single family lives in that house with a storefront in front, right? And they've been doing that for almost decades now. Several decades now. That's not something that you create out of a political statement. You do it out of the necessity to survive.
You do it out of trust and building trust. And I don't feel like a lot of, like, organizations or groups that are doing activism in the city right now are actually really taking the time to do this.
No, there's no heart. You need to put a heart and soul into anarchism.
And I think that's where we're bringing in a lot of, like, sort of, like, what would you call that, like, Western ideas, because I feel like Western, or it just feels like people are really anti-emotional and really anti, like, anti-heart, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
People don't see that as valuable or as progress.
It's,
I'm like,
very valuable.
Yeah, I'm very frustrated with the definition of progress these days.
Well, the definition of progress, yet again, I always say, like, we have to think about it. Does it come to full circle back to capitalism? Right.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem in every social movement, whether it's anarchist, socialism, capitalism, is does it go back to a full circle to capitalism or the very same system of fighting it? Right. So, you know, the system is not fucking broken. The system is functioning for what it is built to be.
Which is to keep people down so people can have this, like, top-down thing and people can be in extreme power.
It's functioning beautifully, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's functioning beautifully on its own effort. I'm not justifying it. And it's in the other side of the fence, it's functioning beautifully.
So,
but
listen.
The problem with a lot of social movements is that the assessment of social progress is not cutting the vein that eventually can grow back to the system.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way...
We got to rip it out at the root. I think that's an Angela Davis quote.
Well, they're not ripping it out of the root. They're pulling the leaves.
Yeah. Well, we got... Everybody, we got to pull the root. Anthony, I got to go because I got my show's ending really soon. Okay, well, thank you so much for talking and all this beautiful stuff. I hope people took that with value. Okay, I will talk to you soon. Thank you for being here. Bye. All right, that was Anthony. They hope that they gave you something to think about. You've been listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn, and we have two events that we're supporting that are coming up. We have Brooklyn Pride turns 21 this year with the theme of equality, no exceptions. There are great events during Brooklyn's Pride Week, June 5th to the 10th, a documentary of the first openly trans FDNY firefighter, queer comedy, and a full day of activities on Saturday, June 10th. There will be a 5K in Prospect Park, then festival, entertainment, family space, and a parade all on Fifth Avenue. There will check out our full week of events and learn about getting involved at the website, brooklynpride.org. And there's also Start Treatment and Recovery Centers, June 16th to the 17th. It's at Start, they believe the best way to treat people is the right way to treat people. They have committed themselves to being the organization that will support transformation for better futures with clinics and adolescent care. Their mission is to educate the community and leverage research for the betterment of those they serve. Start is hiring for talented candidates such as nurse positions, RNs, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, counselors, clinic directors, great internship experiences, and more at their Treatment and Recovery Center's Career Fair on Friday, June 16th from 3:30 to 7 p.m. and Saturday, June 17th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at 937 Fulton Street in Brooklyn. Come enjoy light refreshments and meet with our hiring managers dressed to impress and bring a copy of your resume and all licenses / credentials you may have. Please go to startny.org to learn more. That sounds like a cool thing. You can check that out if you feel like that's something that's for you. So you've been listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. Today was a little bit of a messy episode about what I think would save the world after doing this show for over a year, and the answer to that is nothing. The answer to that is, actually, the answer to what would save the world is you, if you actually decide to commit yourself to that sort of thing. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Next week, I hope to have a bunch of indigenous activists on so we can talk about how Western activist ideology it can be harmful and Eurocentric. Whoa, I never thought of it. Ah, you should have. But if you're ever interested in being on my show, email me at toque@radiofreebrooklyn.com. I would love to have you on the show. We could talk about pretty much anything, and if we disagree, that's okay. But, you know, maybe not, because I might get really pissy and angry because I like to call myself the anarchist Ann Coulter because I'm that sensationalist and crazy. And coming up next, we got Tom Tenney on Brooklyn Bandstand. Going to be playing you local New York City-based music and advertising some shows that are happening in the evening. It's going to be super awesome. I do that show on Mondays. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I hope we can save the world. I hope next year when I do this episode, I feel much better. And I hope we've come to terms with some of the things that we haven't.